This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Today I am joined in the studios by singer, songwriter, is it safe to say indie rock legend?
Oh, I like that.
Kristen Hirsch is my guest of the band Throwing Muses for 30 plus years.
Oh,
there was a bit of a gap.
Still going.
Are you still going, still making music?
You're just not listening.
Also, 50 Foot Wave.
Yeah.
Another project, solo career as well. When did you start going out on your own solo and doing things aside from Throwing Muses?
That was an accident, like most everything I do. I recorded some acoustic material for my husband, who sent it to my business manager, who left it on his desk. Michael Stipe picked it up, sent it to Warner Brothers, which was my label, and they were like, okay, Chris, we'll put out your record. I was like, what record? What are you talking about? They said, your acoustic record. I was like, no. You don't just come across my diary and publish it. But I recorded it on purpose. It sounds exactly like the demos they found. And I thought they felt sorry for me. I don't know what I thought. It's just them saying, oh, poor girl's got some solo acoustic songs. That's so sad. Let's put it out. And they did, and it was the biggest record I'd ever made, and I had to tour by myself at steep learning curve.
Is that how you feel about those songs, that they're like an audio diary, your solo stuff?
I did then. I don't think there's any difference now. I had to learn that it's not a dollar to decibel equation for the listener, that some people prefer the raw bones as opposed to the bright, loud colors, like a pencil sketch instead of a painting. I was really into the colors of the rock band painting, but some people can't hear the song through that.
Do you feel that a different side of you comes out when you're putting together songs that you feel are going to be solo, Kristen Hirsch, as opposed to a song that you're creating for a band sound?
That's a very good question. I have a really
stupid
answer. It's a different guitar. Yes. I write solo songs on my Callings acoustics. I write 50 Foot Waves on my SGs or Les Paul, and Throwing Muses on my this Telecaster or my Strat. My drummers say that's a flawed system, but I haven't thought of a better one.
Well, it's almost like somebody putting on a costume or like a favorite pair of boots, right? It gets you in a mindset.
I think that the seed of inspiration is the whole point. And it's the will. You know, we have will holding our atoms together. So what's going to hold the song elements together? Its own will. And that moment, for me, is the key to everything and the reason for everything. I'm not a performer. I have no stage presence. I might as well be typing up there because I'm working. And I'm not about being looked at or playing the game. I fail at everything except that seed of inspiration. And I assume the moment you can eye that is when you reach for the guitar. And that's why I say there's something to that. Hmm.
The brand new record is called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Who is Wyatt?
Wyatt is my son, who's on the autism spectrum. And unlike his three brothers who just fall asleep in the studio, which is a very boring place for anyone who's not the musician. And also, it's when they hear distorted guitar coming out of the speakers, which is what they heard in utero on tour. They were right next to my amp in my belly. Wyatt just goes wandering, and he found this abandoned apartment building behind the studio called the Coyote Palace, where people left and coyotes moved in.
And where is this? Whereabouts?
In Rhode Island. We live on an island called Aquidneck Island, just three little towns on it. So it's ocean and farmland, and it's actually a very beautiful, intriguing building. And the coyotes are cool. You know, carrying rabbits into their bedrooms with sleeping on the beds and living with silverware and teapots. And it was so fascinating to him that I started following him around, watching him draw it and film it, watching his eyes shine. And I thought, I should be like that when I walk into the studio. I think I probably was, but I needed to articulate that to stay obsessive. And so that became my work ethic, was Wyatt's obsession with the Coyote Palace. And then one day he just said, never going back. And I thought, well, what am I supposed to do? And my drummer from my band Throwing Muses said, that's right. You encapsulate a sensory experience, or it will not become a work. You are engaged in the selfish nature of the making of it. That's your event. And you claim to be a giver. So if you want it to be a gift, you have to draw a line around it and you have to walk away the way Wyatt just did. Mm. And he was right. It was like a pencils down Chris moment.
How old is he, Wyatt?
18.
Yeah. Did that name, Coyote Palace, come from him, come from you as a reflection of that environment of that apartment complex?
I don't know who named it that. It's just called that.
Everybody calls it that. Kristen Hirsch is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record, which is both a CD and a book, we'll talk about that in just a bit, is called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Information is online at kristenhirsch.com. Well, you've brought in the electric. So what are we going to hear first?
This is the first song on Wyatt at the Coyote Palace called Bright.
That is Kristen Hirsch live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Music from the brand new record called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Throwing Muses got back together 3 years ago, 2013, released Purgatory Paradise, which was a huge compendium of tunes, 30 plus songs in a book. And this record is another 24 songs long.
I'm not proud of this.
You have talked about this project being a CD and a book in a way that is kind of sad to think about. You've said a book is still a valuable object, a CD is not.
I don't think a CD ever was. I still value vinyl, as we all do, and yet it's still presumptuous to hand someone your soundtrack and suggest that they adopt it. But a book is still a gift. You can hand it to someone and they will appreciate it and not be offended. It's not like saying, please adopt my religion. And I can fill in some blanks. There's a kindness to it. Music is not something, it's not a language everyone is fluent in. And so it can be a gentling to provide images and stories alongside it. You're not explaining the music because you can't. But I'm sleazy enough to include CDs in my books and suggest that people adopt my religion.
What is the book? Is it a novel that goes along with the record?
It's lyrics and essays. The text informs the song, informs the text. Mm. With the Muses, Purgatory Paradise, it's very, it's this mashup of hodgepodge memories and lots of layers and themes, unusual themes, like yellow versus blue is a theme, and the holographic images is a theme, that homesickness, island mentality, where you walk in a circle for your whole life and that will get you where you're going, and how that affects one psychologically. And this was much more clean, more succinct. White at the Coyote Palace is very plain, and the only theme really is death, but in a good way. Like, it says, don't take yourself seriously. Take life very seriously.
There are definitely some recurring themes on this record. Substance abuse, near-death experiences.
Right. Right? Well, they're related.
It's not bright and sunny all the way through.
It's funny, though.
You play everything on this record?
Yeah.
Every instrument?
It's the sound of having no friends.
I was going to ask what that allowed you to do when you are at the helm of every single sound on the record, as opposed to working with tight-knit group, some of your cohorts from the Muses or other folks.
Yeah, I only work with three other musicians, 50 Foot Wave and the Muses are trios, and the bass player and I are in both. So I'm not even, my space is not invaded by those people, but when I crawl into the studio to make a solo record, it's just nuts. Mm. I'm breaking instruments and combining them into Frankenstein monsters. And I'm a very nice person. You know, I don't want to boss anybody around and then tell them they're doing it wrong. So I do it myself. I boss myself around. I play drums till 3 a.m. if I need to. And I know what I want to hear, and I make myself play it.
Other than the created instruments, do most of those things come easy for you? Or are at least within your grasp, drums and bass and keys and all those kinds of things?
Yeah.
They all come to you pretty easily?
Yeah. I even had to play horns and cello. And if you want something, you get it.
Yeah.
I learned that. And I don't want anything except sound. I never, there's like nothing in the on the planet I value except my children and sound.
Well, with the created stuff that you were making, did you have a sound in mind and then went after it, creating things until you found a match, or did you create something and that sound then informed what you made musically?
These are excellent questions. I step into the studio always knowing exactly where I want every mic placed, where the room mic is going to be, if the, you know, how tight the snare mic is, where like which cello we're going to use, which basses, which amps, which ISO booths, which reverbs we're going to use and not use. And I'm always completely wrong. And I'm not an idiot. It's not a bad idea. It's just wrong. The music knows. And so you have to just listen. Hmm. So, yeah, I go in the studio knowing exactly what I want to hear, and I'm totally wrong every time. And the music lets me know what it needs.
You've now made me self-conscious about our setup here in the studio.
No, my job is over now.
I want to hear another tune, but I also want to ask you about popularity, because throughout the 35-ish years of Muses and your solo projects, I think it's kind of safe to say that you have orbited around popularity or have become popular amongst your fan base, almost despite your best efforts to do so, right?
Yeah.
By writing songs that are not particularly catchy or poppy or sunshiny, right? Certainly not the kinds of things that labels wanted you to do. And you have talked often about some of those confines or some of those asks that you just frankly said, that's not me.
Oh, they're so bad and insidious. I just won't dumb it down. I won't dumb down who I am. I won't insult both women and men by doing fashion shoots. And that's what's asked of you. And the whole recording industry is a big fashion industry. You know, I will not choose style over substance. So they never dropped me. I had to buy my way off. It just said, this is wrong for me. Let me go. And they don't want to. So now I am listener supported.
So you were in a situation where you would be told, you either make the dumbed down pop stuff or you make nothing.
I suppose.
Really?
Well, I think they're just willing to release our records and not work them. We were signed as a musician's, well, I was the only one signed, as a musician's musician, so that they could say to bands who would sell out, we have Throwing Muses, we have Kristen Hirsch, you want to sign with us. Mm. And we were told that's what we were for. But they would literally, radio stations would play our, were playing our single Bright Yellow Gun on Throwing Muses record University all over the country. And we were so close to hit, like, I don't care, but that means you can make another record. And they, Warner Brothers, called all the stations and said, stop, take it off the air. We're not working that record. So the radio stations all called us saying, could you tell your record company we're allowed to play your record? It's like, oh, believe me, I've tried that. They're not into you playing our records. So it wasn't my integrity, really. It was just like, I don't belong here, so I'm going to go somewhere else. And somewhere else is was ultimately listener-supported. Mm. This means I couldn't suck because it would alienate the people it's for. It's not for everyone, but if it's for anyone, then you sort of, you have to publish it, right? Like, I published my teenage diary. It's so humiliating. And yet, it helped some kids. So how could you not?
Right.
I mean, everything I do is sort of embarrassing by nature, as it should be. You should shame yourself, right?
Kristen Hirsch is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record just out is called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace, and information on the CD, vinyl, and book is online at kristenhirsch.com. Can I hear another?
Absolutely. This is from Throwing Muses' last record. It's called Sunray Venus.
I'm fried and careless, I'm fried and blank. We sit at the young man's feet, not as working. And no one remembers to pray. Working in Dolite, another island, where no one remembers to pray. You're blessed for the moment, kisses all around. Sunray Venus crossed on the foot and kisses all around. Leaving that is limbo. I hell, I remember you. Touched with that crust in a moment.
That is Kristen Hirsch live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Well, Kristen, I hope you don't mind me bringing up an old topic, because I'm fascinated by the way you throughout your life have heard music. And this goes back to an accident you had a lifetime ago at this point. But I've always kind of been fascinated with the concept of synesthesia, where people hear colors and all of that. I have read that you've kind of always had ambient sounds in your head?
I have synesthesia.
Do you really?
Yeah,
is that what it is?
I see all chords as colors.
I don't even know what to ask about that because it's such a different world than...
So is yours.
Well, yeah, I guess
know.
So, right?
I can't imagine. And then I found out that other synesthetics don't see D major as yellow and D minor.
Right,
so
you had
like,
said yellow and blue a few minutes ago, and that's what got me interested in yeah. chatting about this. So what is that like from day to day of hearing colors and seeing sounds? And do you know, I guess at this point, you don't know any other way of putting songs together, right?
I've always heard music as colors. That's a given. Everyone's music is colors, but particularly chords, like the combination of notes that all ring off each other and create a chord. Those are colors to me. I wouldn't be able to remember my parts otherwise. I just played something in burgundy.
And, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
Orange. And I used to describe them to my bandmates that way. So they sort of adopted my synesthesia as vocabulary because
wow.
a lot of our chords were clusters without roots, so they didn't have names, and so they were colors to all of us. But hearing music started when I sustained a double concussion after a car accident as a teenager, and that lasted until about 2 years ago when I was treated for PTSD and realized the misdiagnoses throughout my life, which were initially schizophrenia and then bipolar disorder, which I had always said, absolutely not. I'm a clear-thinking, healthy individual. Music is my only problem. And it was true. Music was revealed to be an alternate personality. So that's why I had no memory of having written or played any of my songs ever. And people thought I was speaking metaphorically. That they, you know, they're used to hearing art spoken of that way, but I was literally not there when I played.
But yet you'd remember the songs if you needed to play them again.
Someone else remembered the songs. I wasn't there. So I had debilitating stage fright.
Wow.
I would be backstage slamming beers, doing deals with God, just like saying to my bandmates, I don't belong here, and what am I going to do? Like, get me out of this. And it's because I didn't belong there. But as soon as I walked out and we started playing, someone else would take over. And I was classically switching, but it was never identified as such. They just thought I was focusing. You shake, and then your eyes glaze over, and you don't blink, and you become somebody else. And that happened every single time I played. They thought it was like a stage presence thing.
I mean, through 30 years, give or take, of being on stage, you've played thousands and thousands of shows.
Yeah, I started when I was 14.
Where did you go during those performances? Are you just in a wash of color, or are you just in a different place?
I was the part of me that lived through every trauma.
Hmm.
So Kristen was a really nice person, a good friend, a good mother, a good wife, and I had no dark side as far as I could tell, as far as anyone knew, except music. And my music was hard to listen to. Or it was not like, as you said, it's not sweet.
Right.
But I was. And I had a really hard life, so every trauma was lived by this other personality, and it was being played out as music. So when my skull was cracked, I started to hear that. That's the only difference. I had always had this alternate personality. And I wrote a book called Rat Girl about it, but I didn't know that that's what I was writing about until this PTSD treatment.
Well, yeah, now that you've been through treatment for this, do you still disappear when you perform, or are you now present?
I'm present.
Now there's a crowd right in front of you that you are now...
Exactly.
You're now noticing them,
but
right?
But I don't care because I am the music now. I am her and I'm me. I was always just me. And I didn't understand what was happening when I disappeared and I wouldn't remember it. So it didn't really interfere. I was freaked out a little, but I was used to it.
Do you have any new kinds of feelings of stage fright now that there are all of those eyes that you're noticing right in front of you?
You would think, wouldn't
yeah.
you? No, I'm not, I don't have any shame or pride. I'm like a dog. I have a super ego and an id, so I'm visceral, and I would die for you because I'm good. But there's no ego. There's huge gaps in my character. I just lack an ego, so it suits me to do what I do because I think, well, you know, if I get embarrassed, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm not attached. So no, I don't have any stage fright. anymore. But I wasn't sure what was going to happen. The first time I played after this was at the BBC in London, live, on the air, because I was afraid of the guitars, afraid of what was going to happen. And the woman knew what was happening, and I couldn't believe it. I knew the songs. I knew the chords. I could watch my hands. I'd never seen myself play before. I knew what the song was about for the first time in my life.
Wow.
It was a song I just played, actually. And I looked up afterwards. I was so happy. It's like, this isn't evil. It's just intense. You don't have to color it as dark or light. And I was so happy. And she's sobbing. It's like, do you want me to just talk for a while? But now I'm there. I'm usually there. I can, if I get broken down, like at the end of a tour, sometimes I'll start to disappear again and friends will notice. But it's okay because I'm still the music.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, I'm thrilled that it hasn't hampered your ability to continue making music.
Well, I don't write songs anymore. So there's that.
You don't write songs anymore?
Mm-mm. Not as of 2 years ago.
Because you don't want to, or because they just don't appear? They don't arrive?
They don't appear.
Hmm.
So I've never tried to write a song.
They just happened.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I suppose at some point I'll pick up the guitar and just know how they go, because I'm the songs now too. But I haven't tried.
Huh.
You know, I never wanted to write songs. I wanted them to stop.
Why? Wait,
freaked me out. It was weird, you know. I'm not weird. I was a biology major.
It felt weird because they were just showing up, whether you wanted them to or not, and
mm-hmm.
that was disconcerting.
And no one else could hear them, and I knew they were there. And there are people that hear music. I'm not the only one. And they say what I said. It's like, it's happening in the next room. I can hear it, but I had learned that other people couldn't. Although my husband would know that a song was there before I did. So there is a reality to it before you make it, before you give it a sound body. There's something. He would describe it as just knowing that there was a song was coming. I think there's something electrical. He said it was something like a seizure coming. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely have sort of a seizure-like reaction to songs.
Well, for many folks, myself included, I mean, I hear music all the time. I have melodies constantly in my head.
Hey.
Do you?
I did.
I mean, if you're driving, you know, you drove from Portland to Ashland, you're in a car, you've got a radio on, do those things work themselves in to your psyche in the way that they do for many of us who are fans of music?
I don't have the radio on.
No?
Because I was so used to the chaos of music in my head, and I wanted to listen to it. I loved music, but I was God-fearing when it came to music. It was freaky.
Wow. Well, I have had a fascinating time chatting
with
you.
It's a little too fascinating.
No,
sorry.
It's just really interesting to hear a completely different way of experiencing the creation process of music. So,
I have to say, like, I can laugh about it, but I think it's so important. When people use sound to lie, as in like fashion noise, like it's so deeply misguided. It's so hurtful, so dangerous. When you could use it to tell deep truth that can save people. Like, once your spine is shaken by music, you won't accept anything less. And so the more musically literate we all become, like, I have no problem with music being free in the ether now, because we can listen through genre and time and learn not to be lied to anymore, not to be marketed to. Like,
will you play one more?
Absolutely. This is called Crate. Suburban desert of fast food hype. We swipe at peeling paint, swat away flies. The crawling milk fed, squawking cream filled hominids. It's immune to broken, to naked shame, to bolts of a darkest walls, a sunburn.
flushing and parched, a singular desire to drive into the dirt. No less, no glutton ate, we're free as algae. In a suburban desert, a fast food hike, we swipe at peeling paint, swat away flies. The crawling milk fed, squawking cream filled, harmonious, it's immune to broken, to wasted time, the bolts of a broken flame, the broken walls, to sunburst, snarl, rushing and barge, a singular desire to drive into the dirt. No lust, no glutton ache, we're free as algae. Those with an all-consuming passion.
That is Kristen Hirsch live today on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record just out is called Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Information at kristenhirsch.com. There are also two full books, two memoirs. One that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Rat Girl. The other is, and you have actually said this phrase a couple of times, Don't Suck. It is Don't Suck, Don't Die, Giving Up Vic Chestnut, longtime associate and friend of yours who passed away back in 2009.
Yeah, thanks for knowing that.
I have had such a good time chatting with you today.
You too. Thank you
for coming in.